no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show. This week, our hour of radio drama begins with Nightbeat. We'll hear their story from March 20th, 1950, titled The Man Who Claimed to Be Dead. After that, it's The Cavalcade of America and Torpedo Lane, their story from November 9th, 1942.
Nightbeat.
Hi, this is Randy Stone. I cover the Nightbeat for the Chicago Star. Stories start in many different ways. This one began when I bumped into a little old man who claimed he was dead and proved it.
Nightbeat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone.
My job is to prowl Chicago at night looking for that ever-loving story that's always out there in the darkness waiting for me. But, like most working stiffs, one day a week, I'm a free man. And this was that day. It was one of those hot spring days that come at you out of nowhere. Hot like only Chicago and one other place can get. I woke up late in the afternoon and went outside for a breath of humidity. I opened my collar and rolled up my sleeves. Man, it was sizzling. There was a little park ahead. I was just going to stretch out on the grass when I saw him. My first thought was, pass the salt tablets quick. The sun's got me and I'm seeing things. But no, he was real, all right. Sitting on a park bench on this boiling day, a fat old guy in a heavy overcoat with muffler, galoshes, and gloves. I went over to him. He looked up and smiled.
Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Sit down. Sit down. You look tired.
Thank you, yeah.
Nothing is worth getting tired for. Man is here for such a little while.
Yeah. Forgive me for bringing this up, but I think it's only fair to tell you, at this moment, the temperature in the city is pretty close to 100 degrees.
Oh, is that so?
Yeah. For 2 cents, I trade everything I'm wearing for one heart shafter and Mark's fig leaf.
You are lucky, young man. To feel the good sun, yes, that is something fine. As for me, I am chilled to the bone.
In that overcoat and that muffler?
Yes.
How could any living thing be cold on a day like this?
I suppose that is just it.
What?
I'm not a living thing. No, I'm afraid I'm quite dead. I think I'll walk around a bit. Goodbye.
Say. Huh? I suppose I'm just inquisitive, but you see, that's my business. I'm a newspaper man.
Oh, yes. An honorable profession.
Oh, thank you. Why do you think you're dead?
Think? So you don't believe me either.
Yeah, it's silly, isn't it? When did you die?
The funeral was last week. A very nice funeral. I regret only that there were no plumed horses.
Plumed horses?
In the old country, that was a requirement for the head of a family. But in America, of course, such customs seem foolish.
Foolish. Mm-hmm.
You still don't believe me?
Well, let's say that I'm just an old skeptic.
All right, young man. To doubt everything in this life is to miss so much of life's true magnificence. You need a lesson. Come with me.
So I went with him, this strange man so comfortable in an overcoat on this oppressive day. We stopped at the first large office building and went into the lobby. The old man took me to the directory on the wall.
Can you find the name of a doctor?
A doctor? Why do you want a doctor?
You will see.
Uh-huh. Yes, there's a Dr. E.M. Herrick, Suite 706.
Is he good?
I don't know. He's the only one listed.
He doesn't have to be too good. Come on.
The receptionist in the doctor's suite eyed us quite distastefully, but in a reasonable time we were ushered into Dr. Herrick's presence. He was a nice little fella, but the sight of the old man seemed to confuse him.
Now, just what seems to be the trouble, Mr.
Henrik Azarian.
Yes. Well?
I want you to examine me and tell the newspaper man what you find.
Newspaper man? Well, I'm afraid I don't understand.
And I'm afraid I can't help you, Doc. Why not examine him and let it go, then?
Yes. Please do.
But what seems to be the trouble with you? What are your symptoms?
My symptoms were discovering the world no longer needed me. That can be very painful.
Oh, but this isn't anything to...
Oh, come on, Doc, will you? It's my day off. Let's get it over with.
All right. Now, Mr. Kazarian, take off your overcoat and shirt.
The old guy undressed to the waist. His skin looked yellow and faded, but I figured that could happen to anyone his age. The doctor smiled, fastened his stethoscope to his ears, and began his examination. I put a cigarette in my mouth, but I never lit that cigarette. I was watching the doctor. I was watching the color drain from his face. I was watching his fingers start shaking like he was trying to make nine the hard way. The doctor touched the stethoscope to a dozen parts of the old man's chest. Now he looked up, and it seemed to me, in those few seconds, he'd aged 10 years.
Mr. Kazarian, I want you to wait in the next room.
Uh-huh. Now, what did you find, Doctor? I'm sure the newspaper man would be most interested.
I told you to wait in the next room. Take your coat and shirt. I'll be right with you.
Yes, all right. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
I can't believe it. It's impossible. It's a trick, a hypnotic trick. No, that's not true.
Oh, you're not going to tell me that old man is really...
Not the slightest heartbeat.
What?
No cardiovascular reaction whatsoever. That man is... He...
Oh, no, this is crazy. Maybe it's your stethoscope. Maybe it's on the bum or something.
No, that's not the answer.
Then what is the answer? Are you trying to tell me that guy is really dead? Let's get him back in here. Let's talk to him.
Yes, by all means. He's gone.
But how?
This door leads into the hall. He's not in the hall. You're not going to print this in the paper, are you?
Print it? How could I? The city editor'd fire me so fast my head'd spin. He'd say I was dead drunk. But if you were to confirm...
No.
What?
Never. If you or your editor or anyone else ever calls me about this, I'll swear I never saw you or the old man before in all my life. I have to protect my reputation. You can understand that, can't you?
Understand? At this point, I understand very little, Herr Doctor. After I left the doctor's office, I looked around the building for the old man. He was gone, all right, but his memory lingered on. Who was fooling who? I went into a phone booth and called the medical association to ask about the professional standing of Dr. Herrick. A nasal-voiced young woman informed me that Dr. Herrick was one of the most able physicians in the city, and her manner indicated that I should have had my mouth washed out with soap for even asking. After that, I looked up the name Kazarian in the phone book. It was there, Henry Kazarian, 612 Post Street. I telephoned, but the line was busy, so I hopped into a cab and took a ride out. It was a neat little white bungalow, but all the shades were down. I rang the bell for a long time before the door opened.
Yes? What is it?
I'd like to talk to Henry Kazarian.
Who?
Henry Kazarian.
Henry.
Oh, what's wrong?
You have not heard about my Henry.
Hmm?
He is dead.
But, lady...
We buried him. 2 days ago.
But that can't be.
Oh, I can't believe it myself. It seemed like I suddenly wake up and there would be Henry saying, "All right, Mama, get up. Get up, you're lazy enough for 3 wives.
He was buried 2 days ago?
Yeah, from Kirel's Temple of Rest. A very wonderful service. All that was lacking was The plumed horses.
The plumed horses.
Yes. Oh, Papa, he would have been so mad if he knew there was no plumed horses.
Yes, he certainly was. Yeah. I mean that, Mrs. Kazarin, I'd like to talk to you. May we go inside?
No.
But
we are in mourning. If you want to know about the funeral, talk to Mr. Carell.
Yes, I buried Mr. Kazarin. What do you ask?
Why, for the very trivial reason, Mr. Carell, that I spent the afternoon with him.
I'm a very busy man, Mr. Stone, very busy.
You think I'm crazy, huh? Well, I never saw Kazarin in my life, but here's how he looked to me this afternoon. A short, fat guy, about 65. Looks like he ate too much good food all his life. A mustache that just about drooped down to his chin. You look a little pale, Mr. Carell.
You saw his picture somewhere?
No. I tell you, he's alive. I even went with him to a doctor.
Oh, really? Well, my goodness. And what did the doctor say?
He,
Yes, Mr. Stone.
All right. Where is he buried?
At a cemetery at the edge of the city. I've got to go there on, well, another matter, if you care to come along.
Yes, indeed I would, Mr. Carell. Indeed I would.
Right here, Mr. Stone, this mound. You see, the earth is very fresh and the flowers have hardly wilted.
But listen, Mr. Carell, it can't be him.
Mr. Stone, the only reason I'm doing this is to avoid any stupid, sensational publicity. Carell's Temple of Rest is one of the most highly respected.
Yes, yes, and Dr. Herrick is one of the most highly respected doctors, and Mrs. Kazarin is a grieving widow. There's got to be a logical answer to this. There's just got to be.
You are listening to Nightbeat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone.
When the undertaker brought me back to town, I called an insurance clearinghouse to find out if anyone had cashed in a policy on Mr. Kazarin. No, Mr. Kazarin didn't carry any insurance, so that wasn't the answer. I was beginning to get a little panicky. It was after 6 o'clock and I wasn't a bit hungry. I started walking home to see if I could figure out one thing in all that happened that made even a little sense. Best I could come up with was that everybody was right, that Kazarin really was dead. I was, too, and I didn't know it yet. I laughed a great deal at that. But just the same, I weighed myself on the first penny scale I passed, and I looked at my tongue in the little mirror. I was just a couple of blocks away from home, and I felt somebody tugging at my sleeve.
Mister, What's the matter? You hot or something?
What are you talking about?
Somebody's following you.
Following me? An old guy wearing an overcoat?
No, a young fella. What? Don't look back yet, but he's wearing a blue sport jacket and he's built like an aircraft carrier.
How long has he been following me?
The last few blocks.
All right. Here. Take this and then get lost.
Sure. Thanks, mister. I figured you ought to know.
I kept walking along. And after a while, I spotted his reflection. If only one quarter of those shoulders in that blue sport jacket were really his, I was in trouble. I stopped to light a cigarette. He stopped to tie his shoelace. I wiped the perspiration off my face. He smiled. No, he wasn't following me. It's just my imagination. I turned down a quiet street a few blocks from my rooming house. I looked back. Nobody. I found it was much easier to breathe. And then up ahead of me, somebody was waiting at the corner. Yep, shoulders. He'd circled around the other side of the block. Oh, great. I started walking past him like he wasn't even there.
Mister.
I'm.
Let me say it just once.
Sure.
Lay off.
Fine. Goodbye now.
I mean it. Lay off.
Now you've said it twice.
Leave it alone. It's none of your business.
I presume we're both talking about the same thing. The little man who wasn't there, Kazarin. What's the story on this guy? What's the gimmick? How can he be dead and buried?
Mister, I ask you real nice and polite.
Yeah, I know. Emily Post couldn't have done it better. But still, I'm going to find
out. You're not going to find anything. You're not going to find a thing.
After a while, I started climbing out of the fog. And the way I felt, I wanted to climb right back in. All I had to worry about was history's most promising headache. It was after 9 o'clock when I got to my room. I took a couple of aspirins, flopped across the bed, and tried to relax. Only the street lamp kept shining in my eyes. I got up to pull down the shade. Then I saw the gray sedan parked across the street. Three guys piled out. They started toward the rooming house. And leading the way was my old pal Shoulders, back for an encore. I headed for the back stairs. I went across a couple of backyards, came out on a side street, and now I was starting to get sore. I found a taxi and headed back for Kazarian's house. Taxi let me out about half a block down the street. Kazarian's house was all dark except for a tiny window in back. I went around to the window and looked in. And there was the old man. He was sitting in a leather chair smoking a pipe. I tapped on the window. He turned, recognized me, and smiled. And someone out in front of the house spotted me.
There he is!
Where?
I started running toward the backyard. They were right on my tail. I came to a fence. I found the gate. It was locked. Shoulders, who was heading the pack, was the first to reach me.
You just won't stop, William, Mr. Snoop.
No, I can't. Snap! I tore away from him. I ran down the length of the backyard fence, tried to find an opening. The others were coming up fast. I told myself I could never jump over that fence, but with those guys closing in, I was a hard man to convince. And the next thing I knew, I was crouching behind a couple of garbage cans in the alley. And I thought, what a fine way to die, behind a garbage can, my lifeblood draining out on some old melon rinds.
He couldn't have gotten away.
He must have.
I told you to stop him.
And then the footsteps passed me. My heart decided it was okay to start beating again. And then I went back to the house, and I found the old man's window. It was dark now, like the rest of the house, but the window was open a few inches. I started pushing it up some more.
Who is that?
It's me, Randy Stone. I'm coming in.
I would not advise that, young man. Really, it is quite foolish.
Yeah, nobody knows that better than I. I'd appreciate it if you didn't call for help.
Why should I?
Where's the light switch? Oh, yeah. I see you're not wearing your overcoat now, nor your gloves. You're not so cold now, huh?
No. Isn't that strange here in the house? I do not feel it nearly so much.
Yeah, that is funny.
Why are you coming toward me like that?
I want to shake your hand, Mr. Kazarian, just a gesture of friendliness.
But somehow you do not look at all friendly.
Your hand?
Surely.
I thought so. It's as warm as mine. Very nice pulse, too. What's the story, Mr. Kazarian? Oh,
you are mistaken, young man. I am dead.
How were you able to fool that doctor? Why did the undertaker swear he buried you? Why is your wife in mourning? Why was I slugged?
But these are questions I cannot answer. I'm an old man, and I'm very tired. Would you say I was impolite if I asked you to leave?
Oh, sure, I'll leave. Would you say I was impolite if I asked you where I could find the nearest police station? Because that's where I'm going.
You're not going anywhere, Stone.
Papa, I told you to holler for us if he bothered you.
I knew there would be trouble. I just knew it.
Dr. Herrick.
Life is full of trouble. Death is endless peace.
If this gets in the paper, it'll be the end of everything.
Oh, and Mr. Carell of the Temple of Rest. What a spot for a chorus of Auld Lang Syne.
You keep real quiet, Stone.
Oh, that's a deal, Shoulders.
Well, I wish you would all leave. In my lifetime, I saw none of you. Now that I am dead, you crowd around me like vultures.
Yes, Papa, we leave just so you shouldn't get excited, comboys.
Well, leave me in peace, huh? Leave me in peace.
Papa likes to sit by himself sometime. George, you stop looking so tough. Nobody's afraid of you. Peter, why you just stand here and all? Go to the kitchen, put up hot water for tea.
Yes, Mama.
Mama? Carell, you call her Mama?
Of course, sir.
Go to the kitchen, Peter. All of you. Go. I will explain to the young man.
Perhaps I should do it, Mama.
Mama again. You too, Dr. Herrick?
Yes.
No, I explain, Armand. You only use big doctor words. Nobody understands. All of you, go. I said go to the kitchen. And, George, the red box is some baklava you serve with the tea.
Yes, Mama.
Mama, Mama, Mama.
And you, young man, you come in here, in the parlor.
Yes, Mama.
And we will close the door. Now I will tell you everything.
So they're your sons?
Yeah, well, fine, boys. Though Papa and I, we would have liked at least one girl.
The doctor and the undertaker. Now it begins to make sense, but... But their names?
For their work. They said they need American names. The old country to name Casseria. Young man, that was a name. Meant something.
But here it's got to be Correll and Herrick, hmm? Tell me about Papa.
Excuse me. 1910, Papa and me and the kids, we come to America. Even though in old country, Papa's head of whole Casserian clan, we come, so kids go to school. Become more than gold herders, rug merchants. And they do. My boys do. But they marry, they drift away. Soon, Papa and I are alone. And if the kids come over once every 2 months to see Papa, we think we are lucky. Imagine that, Papa Casserian, head of whole family. And then last week, it started with Papa. I heard alarm clock go off. And I got up like I always do, sleepy, thinking, old country exists for so many thousand years without alarm clocks. Why we need, eh? Why I shut the alarm clock? Papa, where are you? I hurried to the house, and I found him in the kitchen, sitting at table in overcoat. Papa, so here you are. You feel all right.
For a dead man, I feel all right.
For a dead man, you should not talk like that, Papa. You got many years ahead of you.
I got eternity ahead of me. I call my sons. You tell them Papa is dead.
You feel sick, huh? I call Armin. He's a fine doctor.
No, woman, listen to me. I am not sick. No, I am dead. Do not call Armand the fine doctor. Call my son Peter, the fine undertaker. Do as I say. Tell them Papa is dead.
Papa, this is nonsense. I've given you a complete examination. You're not dead. You're in perfect health.
You I do not need any more. Peter, you give me a good funeral. I want plumed horses.
Papa, don't talk like that. You don't need any funeral.
What am I to do? Just sit here? A dead man?
You see, boys, you see how it is.
Sometimes happens in a man of his age. Might be only temporary. I think we should put him in a sanitarium.
No!
Huh?
Are you forgetting who Papa is, the head of whole family?
Mama, in his present condition.
All through the old country, here in America, everywhere, the Casserians, he's the head. Oh, just think what happened if they heard Papa. It's gone crazy.
Well, we could keep it quiet, Mama.
No. News get out somewhere. It would be the end of everything.
But, Mama...
Mama's right. I've been thinking of something else.
Yes?
What about us, you and me? We've got our careers to think of.
But I told you, these things are only temporary.
All the more reason for not putting Papa away. If it's only temporary, then why can't we care for him here?
Well, I suppose we could.
Papa? Where are you going?
Where can the dead man go? To walk the streets?
Don't let him out. Humor him. Do something, Armand.
Papa, I don't think you'd better go out. After all, maybe you really are dead, like you say. And in that case...
Papa, I'll give you a wonderful funeral. You'll see the best in town.
With plumed horses?
Yes, Papa, plumed horses. If you'll only do what we tell you and stay in the house.
Mama Casserian didn't have to tell me any more. They humored Papa so that he'd stay in the house, hoping his madness would pass, and his family and the rest of the clan would not be disgraced. But one morning he escaped, and that's when I met him. When he took me to his son, Dr. Herrick, and told him I was a newspaper man, the doc thought everything was about to fall apart, so he went along with Papa's madness. And so did Correll and the others. That's why I was followed. That's why shoulders slugged me. That's why they all came to my room later to try to talk to me. I promised to keep their confidence, ate some of Mama's cookies, shook hands all around, and left. But as I was walking through the yard toward the street, a window opened.
Young man?
Hmm?
Come over here, over to the window.
Oh, Mr. Casserian. Okay, sure.
You keep your voice down. I don't want them to hear. But you are a nice young man. I feel in you an understanding. That is why I talk to you in the park. That is why I talk to you now.
What do you mean?
They tell you now, how is I am cracked in the head. Insane. Because I say I am dead. Maybe so, but let me tell you this. For 22 years, while I was not dead, and while I was sane, I worked 12, 14 hours a day. I never saw the sun. I never had time to think, to remember the old days. Only working, work, work. Then my boys left me. And even my name they don't want. The name Kazarian. And then Mama and me was left alone. Yeah, that was the way it was when I was sane and alive.
So,
one morning I wake up and I say, okay, if that is how it is when I'm alive, I no longer wish to be alive. I am dead. Now, my sons come fast, I tell you. They say, no, he is not dead. He is insane. All right, I am too old to argue. But now that I am insane, they no longer lift even this little finger. No work. No worry. And my boys stay with us constantly, like the old days. I snap my fingers and they shiver. Yeah. Today, I think maybe Armand is getting too smart again, so I bring you to his office. Did you see what happens? Did you see what happened?
Why, you old faker.
So, what do you say I should do? Should I call them in and say, okay, I am not dead, I'm alive, and give up everything I got now, so they can say I am sane again? Well, should I, young man? Should I?
Oh, Papa, if you did that, that would only prove one thing.
And what is that?
Well, if you called them in and told them the truth, you'd be the craziest man alive. All this and a moral, too, huh? All right, I'll give you a moral. All Papa Kazarian wanted was not to be left out in the cold. I guess maybe that's just about what all of us want. To be needed by somebody, to be loved by somebody. And why not? Is that such a big deal? In all this cockeyed, crazy world, what else do any of us ever really have? Except each other. Copy boy. Oh, no, what am I saying? Copy boy. This was my day off, remember?
Nightbeat, a new dramatic series, stars Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone. Nightbeat is written and edited by Larry Marcus and directed by Warren Lewis. Music is by Frank Worth. Papa was played by Ben Wright. Betty Lou Gerson played Mama. Others in tonight's cast were Jeff Corey, Lou Krugman, and Paul Duboff. Frank Lovejoy will next be seen in Milton Sperling's production Rock Bottom, released by Warner Brothers. Listen next week at this same time and every week as Randy Stone searches through the city for the strange stories waiting for him in the darkness. The stories that come out of the shadows to find their way into Nightbeat. March is Red Cross Month. One of the most important of the many services performed by the Red Cross is its aid to our armed forces. In this country and overseas, in military hospitals, Red Cross workers, aided by thousands of volunteers, play an increasingly vital part in meeting the needs of the patient. Remember, your contribution to the Red Cross will help the men in whose hands our nation's security may rest. There's more great action-packed entertainment for you throughout the week on NBC. Other mystery adventure programs include such popular shows as Dragnet, High Adventure, and Christopher London. Now, stay tuned for Brian Donlevy as a soldier of fortune on Dangerous Assignment on NBC.
Starring Dean Jagger on The Cavalcade of America, sponsored by DuPont, makers of better things for better living through chemistry. Tonight, Cavalcade brings you a story of the men of the Merchant Marine. Those men who, without benefit of glamour or acclaim, go quietly about the business of sailing cargo ships across the seas. Our play, Torpedo Lane, was written by Stuart Hawkins. It is late afternoon. In a building near the New York waterfront, a dozen men are waiting in the large room which seamen call the shipping hall. They wear no uniform. Old felt hats, cloth caps, a raincoat here, a sweater there. And one little man, resplendently uncomfortable, in a derby hat, stiff collar, and an obviously new suit and overcoat. He is the center of interest right now.
He's going to go have his picture took, so he can send it out for a comic Valentine next February.
No, he's going to run for Congress. You bought that outfit to kiss babies in, didn't you, Blinky?
Yeah, sure, but I'll only kiss girl babies who's old enough to vote.
Pipe down, you guys.
Hey, pipe down, fellas.
Medic line freighter needs 3 ABs, an oiler, and a water tender.
That's for me.
Scratch the bulletin,
right? Call me in.
Blue batter line, a collier, 1 oiler, 2 firemen, 4 ABs, and a cook.
Hey, put Tex and me down. We're both firemen.
Yeah. Okay. Check your papers and get your passes at Eddie's desk.
Okay.
Hey, Blinky. You're a cook, aren't you? What you waiting for?
Oh, just one more day, sure. I ain't wore these clothes hardly anywheres yet.
You can't stay without a cook, Blinky. You wanted to miss a convoy so you can swank around one more day?
No, but... All right. I wish some fella would invent a sailor that didn't have to eat. Hey, Whitey, hold up. I'm coming to do it.
Well, young fella, what can I do for you?
Well, I'm looking for Mr. Stevens.
I'm Stevens. You're a new card, aren't you? What's your name?
It's Dugan. Slim Dugan.
Glad to know you, Slim. What's your rating?
Ordinary seaman. I finished the 90-day course at the Merchant Marine School in St. Petersburg last month and signed on to a Chesapeake Bay lumber boat. I came ashore in Baltimore yesterday.
All right now, Slim. All the ships on today's list have got their quota of ordinaries. You come back tomorrow morning early. When the new lists are up, and I'll be screaming for ordinaries then.
Okay, and what kind of a ship do you think that I'd ought to try for, Mr. Stevens? If there's any choice, I mean.
Wait a sec. Hello. Stevens talking. Yeah? How many of them? Swell. Of course I will. Yeah, I'm starting right now. Bye. Hey, Eddie,
yeah.
Watch the call till I get back.
Okay.
Gotta run, Slim. There's a Coast Guard boat coming up the bay with 7 more survivors off a tanker that's torpedoed last week. I'm going to meet him. Hand me my coat off that chair, will you?
Oh, well, sure. Here you are. Say, look, Mr. Stevens, can I go along with you? You know, I'd like to see him, too. I mean, guys who've really been through it like that.
Okay, I guess I can get you onto the pier. But we got to hurry. They said she's almost in already.
Gosh, she's on boat. Yeah, I never seen one this close before.
Here come the stretchers. 1, 2. I don't see any more on deck, do you?
No.
Stand back there, please.
No telling who's under those bandages in the first one.
Say, he must have been burned pretty bad, huh?
Yeah. Gee, it's Pop Hillary in this one. Hiya, Pop. See you at the hospital later.
You know, he hurt you. He grinned at you.
Thank God there's only 2 of them. 2 out of 7 ain't so bad. Here come the other guys. Mike Sherman and Swede. Hey, Mike. Mike Sherman. Come over here, Mike.
Hi, Stevie. How you doing, boy? Hey, is Lazaro ashore yet?
Lazaro? Yeah, they brought him in last Thursday.
Hot dog. I bet him $2 we'd come out of this okay. I was afraid he wouldn't be here to pay up.
You big liar.
Uncle Mike. Uncle Mike.
I...
Say, Helen!
Oh, I thought I'd never get here. How are you?
Fine.
Oh, are you hurt?
No.
Oh, you're back again anyhow. You're not hurt,
are you? Hey, take it easy, kid. I'm okay. Not even a scratch. Oh, meet Mr. Stevens. My niece, Helen Brophy.
Hello.
How do? This is Slim Dugan. New hand just out of school, St. Pete.
I'm glad to know you.
How do you do?
Shake, kid.
Mike, now that I know you're okay, I'll go check up on the others.
Sure, Stevie.
Uncle Mike, are you sure you're all right?
Of course I am. Oh, you dames. Always working, even when things is all over.
How long were you drifting, Mr. Sherman, before they picked you up?
6 days. And lay off that Mr. business. My name's Mike.
Okay. 6 days. That must have been something to go through.
Oh, it wasn't so bad. Only trouble was nobody thought to bring any cigarettes. Say, Helen, where's your mom? Didn't she come down with you?
She wasn't home when they phoned, and I left a note saying I'd call her as soon as I knew how you were.
Well, let's go tell her to start getting dinner ready. Boy, I've been dreaming about one of her pies for the past 3 days.
Now, I guess Mr. Stevens has gone right along with the ambulance.
Huh?
Mike.
Yeah.
So what's a good hotel in town that don't cost too much? I just got in from Baltimore this morning. Any of those places near the hall are okay, I suppose.
Why, yeah, but... Helen, has your mom got anyone in the back room right now?
No, Harry Ernst checked out yesterday morning.
Well, then come on home with us, kid. My sister will give you a room and swell grub for a buck and be glad of the money.
Uncle Mike's ready for more coffee, Mom.
Well, pass your cup then, Mike.
I thought there was a coffee shortage.
Oh, not tonight. Go on with your story now.
There's nothing to tell. We burned out a baron and had to drop out of the convoy. Next morning, we got it. Pow. Before I could even get topside, another one. Whammo.
Two torpedoes this time, huh? The other time, they only hit you with one.
You mean you've been torpedoed before, Mike?
Yeah, didn't I tell you? 3 months ago on the Facetown Bay. That time, we got the fire under control and brought her in okay.
How's about another piece of pie, Mike?
Oh, gosh, no, sis. I'm full enough to bust right now.
Are you slim? Just this little sliver?
No, thanks, Mrs. Brophy. Go on, Mike.
Well, by the time I got on deck, 2 tanks was ablaze. 1 forward, 1 amidships. We thought we could save her, but then another tank blew up, and that did.
Oh, gosh, what'd you do then?
Well, I got into one of the lifeboats, and 6 days later, they picked us up. Oh, boy.
Looks to me like you're ready for bed, Mike.
I sure am. That blamed little patrol boat bounced around, so I didn't get no sleep on the way in. I don't know how those gobs stand it on them things.
I wouldn't have minded being on one if I could have gotten into the Navy.
You're welcome to them. I like a steady ship under me. You take a tanker carrying 100,000 barrels of airplane gas. Why, she'll slide along as steady as a billiard table in most any kind of weather.
Why wouldn't they take you in the Navy, Slim?
Oh, my left knee's got a gimp in it. I ran a pitchfork into it when I was a kid.
Oh, I didn't notice it.
Oh, it only bothers me when I'm real tired, but... They wouldn't take me into the Army or the Navy or anywhere. I tried them all.
Well, I've got a tight lid, folks.
Well, I'll go open your bed and see you got enough blankets. It's going to be a coldish night tonight.
Yeah, I'll get down to the hall with you in the morning, Slim.
No, you're not going to ship out again right away, are you?
Why not? If there's a tanker on the list tomorrow, Stevie will probably call me anyhow. Might as well save him the trouble. Good night, kid. Night, Helen.
Night.
Good night, Uncle Mike.
Gosh, I can't figure him out.
What do you mean?
Well, I just can't imagine anybody wanting to be on a tanker instead of on a patrol boat.
Why not? Uncle Mike sailed on tankers for the last 8 years, and he's used to them, and he likes them.
Yeah, but on a patrol boat, he'd be chasing subs instead of getting sunk by them. He'd really be counting for something.
You mean you don't think what he's doing counts for something?
Well, it's not like one of the fighting services.
Oh, that's the craziest idea I ever heard of. What good are your fighting services without gas to fly the planes and run the tanks and stuff?
Oh, sure. I told myself all that when I signed up at the training school. But there's a difference.
You bet there's a difference. There's no uniform and no medals and no glory about the Merchant Marine. There's only work and going into danger knowing you can't fight back when it strikes. If you ask me, that takes real courage. The realest kind of courage there is.
Well, gee, I didn't mean to upset you, Helen. I just felt it. Oh. Well, I'm in it. I'll give it a whirl. But I guess I'll always feel it was second choice.
Maybe that's because you don't know much about it yet.
Morning, Stevie.
Hello, Mike. Hiya, Slim. You're just in time, Slim. Got a freighter that needs 3 ordinaries in a hurry. Blue Banner.
Hold it, Stevie. Slim ain't interested in no freighters.
Huh?
What's posted for us tanker men this morning? We want to ship together.
Say, you haven't gone and talked the kid into becoming a tanker stiff like yourself, have you?
Listen, Stevens. The last guy who called me a tanker stiff didn't wake up the next day. Come on now, what's on the list?
Well, there's one up with your old line, Mike. Wants an A.B. and two ordinaries.
Check off one A.B. and one ordinary, Stevie. Okay, kid.
Sure.
Where is she, and how soon do we go aboard?
You are listening to Torpedo Lane on the Cavalcade of America, sponsored by DuPont. As our play continues, Slim, played by Dean Jagger, is talking with his friend Mike. It has been 14 days since they left home port.
You did okay on the wheel tonight, Slim. I saw the old man nodding to himself every time you made a zig.
Yeah. You know, I made him better than that dinky little panel boat up ahead. He was all over the ocean. Did you notice?
Uh-huh. There's always one like that in every convoy. Gee, we've been off watch half hour already.
Uh-huh. It's a swell night, ain't it?
Yeah.
I guess that's what they mean by a tropic moon, huh?
Yeah.
Sure is big.
Yeah, I wish it wasn't so big. Or so blame bright.
Oh, I like it. A night like this does things to you, do you know it?
Yeah.
Makes you sort of sad, so pretty.
I know what you mean, kid. I've seen a million nights like this, but still hit you the same way. You always think you've never seen the ocean so pretty.
Sort of talks to you, don't it?
Uh-huh.
Mike, before you was torpedoed the first time, did you... Well, were you worried about getting hit?
Listen, kid. The only time to worry about getting hit is after it's happened.
Yeah, sure. It don't seem like 4 days since we started north again, does it?
Time always goes fast when you're in a convoy. You'll be surprised how soon we'll be seeing little old New York again.
Say, you know what we ought to do when we get back? We ought to take Helen and her mother to the movies.
Ruth don't like movies.
Oh, don't she?
Helen does, though.
Yeah? Would you think that she'd go with me?
Why not? You made quite an impression on her, kid.
How'd you mean that?
She told me you was the nicest guy she'd ever seen. Outside of...
Outside of who?
Outside of a nut house, and didn't I think they ought to put you back?
If you wasn't her uncle, you know, I'd toss you over this hill and make you swim the rest of the... Hey, what was that?
Stand by for trouble, kid.
Oh, what's happened?
One of the other ships has been hit. Come on, over the port side, what we can see. Yeah, the banana boat. Look at it.
Torpedo?
Of course, you dope. There's a sub off there somewhere. He's had it still wetted against that moon. Holy smackers, there it comes. Torpedo coming on the port beam. Turn! Hard left rudder!
Why don't they turn her? It's too late, Mike. It's too late. It's going to get us.
That lousy moon. The sub had us lined up against it like ducks in a shooting gallery. Kiss the deck, kid.
My foot!
Yeah, I guess so. Let's heat those flames.
Number five tank, that's it. We gotta keep them spreading. Come on, grab a hose line.
Sure, right with you, Mike. What's that?
The destroyer. Depth bomb. She's trying to get this up.
I hope they blow it clear toward China. Give me that hose.
Don't get too close, kid. Them flames are swelling this way. Come back, kid. Back to the thing.
I'm okay.
Slim! Slim!
Okay, Mike. Slim! That must have been one of the main tanks, wasn't it?
There. Come, kid. Back out.
This heat. Boy, if it's like this here. What's it like? What's happened to the guys up on the bridge?
No telling.
All hands abandon ship. All hands abandon ship.
Here we go, kid. Jeepers, no use trying to get the lifeboats from here.
Over to this side, Mike. There's no burning oil to win it here.
Okay, kiddo. See that life raft floating out there right in the moon track? Jump, swimmer.
You first, Mike. I'll follow you.
This ain't no time to be polite, you mug. Go on, jump.
Okay, Mike. See you later.
Watch yourself. Here comes Bava.
Must be about midnight by now.
Yeah. A little raft like this travels some in the wind.
I wish we could have helped whoever it was yelling that time.
Yeah. Maybe found another raft or something. You can't tell. I ain't heard any more tanks go up since that second one. She was a sweet ship. There she is, burning like a torch out of hell. I sure hope they got that sneaking sub.
You said it. Say, Mike.
Yeah?
Mike, I just realized I wasn't scared at all. I'm not scared now.
Well, what's funny about that?
Well, I sort of expected to be. I mean, I was afraid that I might be, but I wasn't.
I never thought you would be, kid. Let's toast to see who stays awake while the other guy gets some sleep, huh?
Boy, that sunshine feels good. It's really getting some warmth in it now.
Yeah. Be plenty hot before long.
There's not so much smoke back there now, Mike.
Say, there ain't at that. You know, I bet them two tanks is darn near burned out. By gosh, I'd give my eye teeth to know if there's a chance of bringing her into port after all.
How do you think there might be?
No telling. Even if one of her engines run, I'd like to take a shot at it. There's a whole lot of good gas in them other seven tanks, boy.
Mike.
Huh?
Mike, look there.
Where?
No, this way, Mike. Look, it's one of the patrol boats and it's coming back.
Glory be. They're heading for the tanker, though. Wave something. Wave your arms while I get my shirt off. Attaboy. Ahoy! Look this way, you guys. Ahoy!
Can you men come aboard without help?
Put her alongside. We'll hop out, Lieutenant.
Watch your step now. The swell's pretty tricky.
Grab my hand.
All right. All right, thanks. Halfway, Slim.
I'm okay. All clear, sir.
Lieutenant, can I borrow them glasses of yours, please?
Sure.
Thanks. I'm right, Slim. The lifeboats are clustered around the stern. They're going back aboard. For Pete's sake, hurry, Lieutenant. They'll need our help putting that fire out.
Haven't you guys seen enough fire for a while?
Not if there's a chance of saving her. That's our ship.
Full ahead, all engines. Far from burned out yet.
We can put that blaze out. There's the old man by the rail after the ventilator there. Come on, Lieutenant. Put us alongside that sea ladder.
Well, there's a nasty sea running. You have to jump quick.
Hey, Captain! We're coming aboard. Okay?
All right. We need every hand if we're going to get her in.
Now, you jump first, Slim, and get up that ladder fast. Don't be in my way.
Right.
All right, go ahead. Jump.
I made it. Come on, Mike.
Coming,
kid.
Hey, sit up.
Hey,
Mr. Larry's
in between.
Pull
it stern, all engines.
Turn that boat off. You'll crush him.
Grab him. Hey, you with that boat, fish him out.
There he is. Get him. I got him. Give me a hand with the boy. Logan, don't hang on that ladder. Want to fall in too? Hurry.
But Mike's hurt. He's hurt bad.
They've got him aboard the patrol boat. They'll take care of him. Up that ladder with you.
Bear a
hand.
Aye, aye, sir. I'm coming. Hello, Mr. Stevens.
Well, but ain't Slim Dugan. Hi, kid. Where'd you come from?
Say, Mr. Stevens, you heard anything about Mike?
Mike Sherman? No. Why, was he...
Well, he got hurt. The patrol boat transferred him to a seaplane, and then they flew him ashore 4 days ago. I thought that you'd know.
Well, I hadn't heard a word.
Okay, thanks.
Where are you going? I want to talk to you.
Well, to his sisters. They must have heard something there. Hello, Helen.
Slim, I did get back all right. I'm so glad. Come on in.
Thanks. Helen, you had any word about Mike?
He died last night, Slim.
Oh.
Mother was there at the hospital when he went. Kept asking if we'd heard from you. He was worrying about getting the ship in.
Yeah. He would. He was a great guy, Helen.
Yes. Did you bring him in all right?
Yeah. With 3.5 million gallons of aviation gas still left.
He'd have been glad.
I wish he could have known it was okay before he went.
Excuse me. Hello? Why, yes. Just a minute. It's for you, Slim.
It's for me? Okay. Hello? Oh, yeah? What? Well, yeah, sure. How soon? Okay, sure. Bye.
Who was it?
It was Stevens. There's a tanker that's short-handed.
Oh.
And she's got to clear tonight.
So soon?
Yeah, so soon. I told him I'd be right over.
I'm glad you're going, Slim. It's what Mike would do if he was here.
You know, I'll never be as good a tanker stiff as he was, but I can try, anyhow.
You don't know where you'll be going, I suppose.
Well, Stephen said to bring my heavy clothes. I guess that means that I won't be going down south again. You know, I guess this time that we'll be taking high-octane gas right to the boys who use it.
Right to where it'll be doing fighting service. Wasn't that what you said?
Yeah, I guess it was. I must have sounded sort of silly that night.
That seems a long while ago now.
Yeah. Well, I better be going. Goodbye, Helen.
We'll be expecting you to drop around here when you get back, Slim.
Yeah, I will. Helen, yeah, I sure will.
Good luck, Slim.
I'll be seeing you. So long.
Thank you, Dean Jagger. Ladies and gentlemen, in a few moments, Mr. Jagger will return to the microphone to present Miss Madeline Carroll and Third Mate John Grossman of the U.S. Merchant Marine. Miss Carroll is with us tonight not as an actress, but in her official role as Director of Recreation for the United Seamen Service. Before we hear from her, we have a story of how chemistry solved an important problem. This is a story of an emergency. A minor emergency that easily might have become a major catastrophe for the Navy if chemistry hadn't stepped in as a troubleshooter. Paints, lacquers, varnishes, practically everything that flies or floats must be given a protective coating of one kind or another. That often means paint. Well, where you need paint brushes. And that's where the trouble began. Paint brushes must have bristles. And for the past quarter century, American brush manufacturers have imported their bristles from the Orient. Something like 80% of the ones America used for brushes came from the scraggly hogs of China and Manchuria. The rest came from Russia. And that was all right, before Pearl Harbor. But since then, with the nation accelerating war production, with new Navy craft launched one after another, more brushes have been needed than ever before. And the bristles are no longer coming in from the Orient. For some purposes, it was possible to find a substitute. But for paint brushes, especially large brushes with long bristles, only hog bristles were satisfactory. Nothing else had the right taper, the resiliency, and the resistance to wear. That was the situation a year ago, and that was where chemistry stepped in. Nylon bristles for toothbrushes, introduced by DuPont in 1938, were the first really satisfactory synthetic bristles ever made. When the Navy asked DuPont to help in making a long paintbrush bristle equal to or better than natural hog bristles, DuPont was ready with an already developed process for tapering nylon filaments to serve the purpose, samples of which were approved by the Navy in short order. The Navy then preempted DuPont's entire semi-commercial production, necessitating the building of enlarged facilities that will soon be ready to meet the additional wartime needs of our armed forces. As with most other essential materials, these nylon bristles for paintbrushes will not be available for civilian needs until after the war. In short, DuPont chemists solved the problem. And as happens so often when science tackles a job, the man-made product is superior in many respects to the natural material. Nylon bristles don't have to be sterilized or sorted or blended. Moths don't eat them. They don't dry out or rot. And they wear at least three times as long as natural bristles. Chemistry, alert to the necessity of guarding against emergencies, has not only solved the problem, but has produced a better material. A new addition to the lengthening list of DuPont's better things for better living through chemistry. Ladies and gentlemen, the star of tonight's cavalcade, Dean Jagger.
Thank you. On this broadcast, honoring the men of our Merchant Marine, it's my pleasure to present Miss Madeline Carroll, as Director of Recreation for the United Seamen Service.
Thank you, Mr. Jagger. Appearing with me tonight is John Grossman, who is third mate in the Merchant Marine. I've asked him to come here because he is typical of the thousands of young men who have entered this very important arm of our war effort. Tell me, Mr. Grossman, are you on furlough now?
No, I'm not, Miss Carroll. I'm standing by for assignment to a ship. You see, I've just finished 4 months training at New London that prepared me to sit for my mate's license. There were more than 1,000 of us all together at the school.
That training school is something new, isn't it, Mr. Grossman?
Why, yes, it is. In the old days, most men could go to sea 1,000 years and never get out of the forecastle. But that's all changed now. Today, we are paid $126 a month while we study. And when we finish the course and made the grade, we receive a license that's good for any ocean, any time. We're learning from our previous mistakes. After this war, we're going to keep our Merchant Marine and not give it back to the Indians.
Amen to that, Mr. Grossman. And until the war is over, ladies and gentlemen, it is up to us to see that the men of the Merchant Marine are provided with recreation, medical help if they need it, personal service, and companionship when they are ashore. We do it, and rightfully so, for our soldiers, sailors, and marines. The Merchant Marine deserves support, too, in whatever way you can afford. No matter how little it is, it will be appreciated. Won't you help? Address me, Madeline Carroll, care of United Seamen Service, 39 Broadway, New York City. Thank you.
Next week, ladies and gentlemen, Cavalcade brings you a narrative story of a subject vital to every one of us today, Alaska Under Arms. Our star will be the popular radio actress, Arlene Francis. Be with us again next week when Cavalcade presents Alaska Under Arms, starring Arlene Francis. The orchestra and musical score tonight were under the direction of Don Voorhees. The part of Mike was played by Ed Jerome, the role of Helen by Ann Thomas. Cavalcade is happy to announce that Dean Jagger will soon be seen in the Broadway production Yankee Point. This is Clayton Collier sending best wishes from DuPont.
This program came to you from New York. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
That's the Relic Radio Show for this week. Hope you enjoyed our selections this time. You can find more from Cavalcade of America, Nightbeat, past episodes of this show, and everything Relic Radio at RelicRadio.com. Find our Shoutcast stream there as well, and our donate button. If you enjoy this and all the shows, give that donate button a click. Your support makes it all possible. Thanks, as always, to those who have, and thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next week with another episode of the Relic Radio Show.